What up, listener? We wanted to take a second to thank you for listening to this Blue Wire podcast. Be sure to show your support to this pod by subscribing and dropping a 5-star review on iTunes, a follow on Spotify, or the appropriate dApp for any other platform you might be listening on. And if you're enjoying this show, chances are you'll like one of our 75 other sports podcasts. Find more shows you'll love at BlueWirePods.com. Thanks again for listening, and now back to your regularly scheduled podcast.
This episode of Vegas Nation is brought to you by STN Sports from Station Casinos. STN Sports is the only sports betting app you need this season. Sign up today and get a new sign-up bonus of up to $50.
We're trying, like I said, to bring the right kind of people in here, we think, that can build a championship football team.
You guys are the most loyal fans in the world, and I know it hurts that we might not be the Oakland Raiders forever, but we are still Raider Nation.
I think it's going to be a get an army coming into Las Vegas.
What's up, everybody? It's time for another episode of the Vegas Nation podcast, where we bring you up to date on all things happening with the Las Vegas Raiders. Vegas Nation is brought to you by STN Sports Mobile by Station Casinos. And yeah, I said it, Las Vegas Raiders, they're here. It's time. The team is coming. Vinny and I were out at this Super Bowl news conference with Roger Goodell, and we're going to get into all of that and what he said about the jubilation.
It feels like you're no longer sneaking around anymore saying Las Vegas Raiders.
No,
you can actually come out and say it and not feel like you're, you know, burning somebody or talking out of turn. This is real. This is reality. Yeah, it's the Las Vegas Raiders. Everyone is recognizing them as such. And as you mentioned, Roger Goodell, the NFL commissioner, at his State of the League address today, dropped a little bit of news about Las Vegas and the Raiders, and a big event that's potentially coming to Las Vegas pretty soon.
Pretty soon. So let's just get things rolling here. But first of all, I need to introduce Miles Simmons on the other end, Vinny Bonsignor, our beat writers, and I am Heidi Fang. Guys, like Vinny said, we are out in Miami. We're covering all things related to the Super Bowl. The AFC champions coming from the AFC West, the Chiefs. So the Raiders are going to have to build up to get to that pinnacle, to be able to get over that hump and be the team that can overturn the Chiefs as the reigning champs. But before I'm getting way ahead of everything. But Vinny, you talked right there about talking with Roger Goodell today and asking him those questions about Las Vegas. Will it get a Super Bowl? Did it seem like the inclination is yeah, but he had to hold back what the information is because it's not going to be released until a certain time?
Yeah, and by the sound of it, by his own words, probably by sometime in this calendar year, it'll be announced. And it's not like it used to be where there was a bidding process and they dwindled it down from a bunch of cities to some finalists and a final bid amongst the finalists. Basically, it's, hey, do you want to host the Super Bowl? You know, the NFL will identify a couple of cities and ask if they want to identify or host the Super Bowl. Typically, those cities say yes, and then negotiations begin. And I think that's what he's saying, is that we're going to get to that point here sometime this year. And I think sometime this year, all of that will be finalized, and they'll announce which Super Bowl it's going to be. My inclination is it's going to be either the 2025 or 2026 Super Bowl. Is probably more likely the 2025 Super Bowl.
And the 2025 year is the first one that isn't already assigned to a team. So in case the listeners out there aren't aware of that. But Miles, what's your take on what Las Vegas might be like if it does get a Super Bowl? I mean, we have the Strip, obviously, that it just kind of makes everything bigger and better. What do you think Las Vegas is as far as a Super Bowl city? Does it have what it takes to host one?
Definitely. And I think the biggest thing that you need is a lot of hotel rooms. And, you know, you need a couple practice facilities. They're going to have that with what's coming in Henderson with the Raiders. And then also you're going to have a UNLV practice facility. So you'll have those kinds of things. But then you also have the convention center. And that's something that you need for Radio Row. And I think the biggest thing about Las Vegas is that it is so easy to get around because it's not as big of a city as, say, Atlanta, where I was last year for the Super Bowl. And then this year, you you guys, I mean, before we came on the air, you were talking about the difficulty of how it has been to travel around Miami and get from place to place. Look, it is so easy to get around Las Vegas. I've lived here for now literally a week. And I'll tell you, coming from California and driving around here is like a godsend. It's amazing because there's just... it's a much smaller city. It's easier to get around because, A, there just aren't as many people. So I think when you have those kinds of things, and then you talk about all of the glitz and glamour that comes from being in Las Vegas, and I believe Roger Goodell said a version of this earlier today. Like, when you see what the draft is going to be here in Las Vegas, and I think it's going to be pretty magnificent based on all of the renderings of everything that's come out in the last week, week and a half or so, then you think about, okay, this is a city that is used to hosting big events. Yeah, this city is perfect for the Super Bowl. And honestly, I think that the Pro Bowl should be held here every single year. But that's another conversation. But yeah, I think when you get to 2025 and, you know, the venues that have already been established as where the Super Bowl is going to be next. So you've got Tampa Bay. They'll be hosting Super Bowl again in Raymond James Stadium for the third time. You're going to have SoFi Stadium in Los Angeles. I think everybody is expecting that to be one of the best stadiums in the entire world. That'll host its first Super Bowl. Then it's going back to State Farm Stadium in 2023, and then the Superdome will host it again in 2024. So 2025 is, as you guys were saying, the first year that is open for business, I guess, if you will, for another Super Bowl. And yeah, I think it stands to reason that Las Vegas will definitely be on the short list to host in that year.
Check this out. I was just looking online here. I wanted to find out something about a campaign that I'm going to discuss with Josh Jacobs, who's featured in a Super Bowl commercial. But the Raiders now list themselves on Twitter as the Las Vegas Raiders at Raiders, and they have quoted the Goodell comment on what the team and the reception is like that Vinny asked at the news conference today. It says, "We think it's going to be a great success. We're anxious to be there." I mean, Miles, this is your first week in Las Vegas. You said that. I just want to ask you, just, you know, since we had mentioned it, what's it been like for you?
You know, the one thing that I will say, Heidi, and that I don't know if I'm surprised by it or intrigued by it. I don't necessarily know what the right word is. But I will tell you, every time I go somewhere, whether it's to the Apple store because I need to replace my headphones or to the gym because I want to get a workout in, like, I see Raiders stuff. And it is very striking coming from a place where you saw Raiders stuff all the time in Oakland, and also coming from a place, you know, where I used to work in LA, where you didn't see much Rams stuff ever. And, you know, as the Rams got better and made the playoffs and made the Super Bowl, you started to see a little bit more. But I think for a team that is not even going to play its first game in Las Vegas for, you know, another 8-9 months, it's pretty striking to see just how many Raider fans there already are in Las Vegas. Like I said, every time I go somewhere, I see some Raider stuff. So that has been my first impression, I think, of the city.
Yeah, Vinny, do you think that's just kind of a byproduct of a lot of Los Angeles fans having moved into Las Vegas and it being so close by that we're seeing that many kind of Raider fans walking around the city already?
A little bit, yeah. There's no question about that. But I also think Nevada and Las Vegas are ready to embrace their own team, their own version of the Raiders. This is going to be Las Vegas's team. And I know that, you know, the Raiders have a nation that extends beyond just the borders of the United States. It goes everywhere.
Yeah.
But I think that this is truly going to be Las Vegas's team. And I think that the residents there, whether they're transplants or natives, are ready to welcome them with open arms. So I think that what you're seeing around town is a reflection of the excitement that this city has for the NFL and for the Raiders.
Yeah, Ed and I went to London. We met Crusader Raider, or Ed Rainey, our columnist here. He's writing in the cube next to us here in the Courtyard Marriott,
Miami. Typing away.
You can hear them clicking. But yeah, I mean, like you said, they do spread everywhere. When they go out, they roll hard. They roll like a family. We met Joker Raider over the course of this year. And of course, there's a lot of push for the Violator to be able to get some PSL tickets to come out to that new stadium that just got some seats in it. I know Mick Akers kind of covered that and the first seats going in. So that's also part of all this excitement. But as we're here in Super Bowl week, you know, Josh Jacobs, I wanted to point out that he's going to be in the Super Bowl commercial that's brought by Kia, and it kind of features a little bit about his path to where he's become, where he is, how he's built himself up. He was homeless at one point. We all know that part of his story, and he's been able to make it in the NFL by his father home. Miles, you wrote that story. And he started now this Twitter account called @future_28. And he's kind of using it as a way to speak to others that have goals and dreams that they're trying to figure out how to achieve it. And I just think that that's something great. And that's something why he's Offensive Rookie of the Year, you know?
Go ahead. Yeah, no question. He's been able to use his story and his talent as a real platform to be able to then reach back into the community to help. And I really give him a lot of credit for that. You know, sometimes people just forget where they came from. Sometimes people want to erase some of their past. He's embracing it, you know, the bad parts as well, to use as an example of what is possible no matter where you come from. And I think it's just tremendous, and I think it really speaks to who he is. And it's why when John Gruden talks about him, and Mike Mayock talk about him, and Derek Carr talks about him, his teammates talk about him, they do it in glowing terms and with admiration. And it's not just because he's a really good football player, and as he showed last year, pretty darn tough as well. He's turning out to be a great human being. And I think that's when you're talking about faces of your franchise and examples and people that you want fans to embrace, that's what you're talking about.
Absolutely. So, Miles, as you see this team roll into the city, as we've been talking about, some of the things that I think Raider fans want to know is this going to be a winning team right off the bat? Is this going to be a team that can contend in the playoffs? Obviously, we talked about the Chiefs. They're here. They're in the Super Bowl. That is somebody that is holding that top spot in the AFC West right now. So this is where they have to play up to. We know that. So as we start looking at the combine and everything that's coming up, and Vinny, you just came back from the Senior Bowl. These are all players and pieces that the Raiders are going to look to build upon. So when we're starting to look now, we see the 12 and the 19, and people are starting to fall into place when you look down the Justin Herberts and, you know, the Jerry Judys and everybody else that is, you know, CD Lamb out there. Miles, where do you see, like, this team building as they come into Las Vegas? Like, what is it that they need to do to really get over that hump to be this team that can take down the Chiefs?
Well, I think Daniel Jeremiah, who does a really, really good job working for NFL Network, also does color commentary for the Chargers radio broadcast. He had a tweet earlier this week, and I think it really encompasses what the Raiders are up against. And I'll just read the tweet for you. It says, team building thought for those in the AFC. Kansas City, Baltimore, and Houston have young quarterbacks surrounded by track teams. You better get faster on defense if you want to compete for the next decade. And I think, especially because Patrick Mahomes and, you know, Tyreek Hill, Mecole Hardman, Robinson, Kelsey, all those guys are in the AFC West, that's what the Raiders have to compete against for ostensibly the next decade. And now they probably will not be able to have all those weapons for the next decade, but I think you understand the point, right? Like, when you have teams that can score like the Chiefs, and you have somebody who looks like he is on the way to being the best quarterback of all time, that is something that is going to affect the way you have to play on defense. You have to build your team in order to stop somebody like Patrick Mahomes. And I think right now the Raiders are built a little bit more like the Tennessee Titans than they are to the Kansas City Chiefs. And what I mean by that is they're built to have a really good run game, you know, control the game, play from ahead, and then, you know, basically bludgeon you to death in the fourth quarter with a really, really good running back. That's how Tennessee was able to make it to the AFC Championship game. But they also have a strong defense that can force turnovers, and that's why they beat the Baltimore Ravens in the manner in which they did, right? So I think when you look at the Raiders right now, this is a long-winded way of saying this, you have to be able to improve on defense based on the way the team is currently constructed. It's not... It should be a more explosive offense next year if the Raiders do draft somebody like a CeeDee Lamb, like a Jerry Jeudy. You know, maybe they get somebody in free agency who can stretch the field and be the guy that Antonio Brown was supposed to be, but, you know, obviously he was not. And so if that happens and Derek Carr has the full complement of weapons, then yeah, you might get some more explosives. But I think when it comes down to it, the Raiders need to improve on defense. And if they don't improve on defense, then this is still going to be one of those teams that's maybe in the 7-9 to 9-7 range instead of maybe the 10-11 win range, right? Like, that's just where they are right now. They have to be able to improve significantly on defense.
Well, Vinny, how big a spenders do you think that they're going to be in free agency? Or do you think this is a team that builds more through the draft? Or, you know, just if you had to weigh out where they're really going to find their pieces.
Well, I think they're definitely going to build more out of the draft. And I talked to Mike Mayock about, you know, what level of aggressiveness they're going to show in free agency. And, you know, like he said to me, look, you would love to walk out of free agency with three new starters, you know, obviously. But you have to also look at the history of free agency and look at where that money is going and whether it's you're spending it prudently or irrationally. You know, are you spending money for long range or just short term benefits? And those are all things that you have to weigh, which means they're going to be really careful with free agency. They're not just going to spend it frivolously because they have it. I do believe that they are. If Robbie Anderson makes it to free agency, I fully expect them to go hard after him. I know that they like him, and that could solve or help solve, you know, the wide receiver position. And the good thing is free agency happens before the draft, so you can fill some holes through free agency and then reset your draft based on what happened in free agency. So if you can get a wide receiver, you know, that fills that number one wide receiver spot, then you could be a little bit more aggressive defensively with those first two picks. You don't necessarily, and you know, as Mike Mayock told me in our sit down, just take a look at the history of the first round wide receivers and how many of them have been successful versus how many of them have just been busts. How many of them have not been what you thought teams thought they were going to be when they invested high picks? The word that he used, it's pretty daunting. So I'm not so sure he didn't say that to kind of throw other teams, you know, off the hunt a little bit by kind of leaning toward not drafting a wide receiver and getting them to think that, and then pulling the double reverse and actually drafting a receiver at number 12. I think they're going to draft the best player available at that spot, whether it's at wide receiver or linebacker. But I think he's going to be really careful, whether it's spending the money or drafting a wide receiver really high. He wants to be as 100% sure as you possibly can be that whoever they're spending the money on and whoever they're investing in that 12th pick is going to be able to make immediately or help immediately, and not just for the short term, but for the long term. So I could still see them going in a whole bunch of different directions. But as he clearly stated, for us to get better, we need to address that wide receiver spot. We need more speed on the perimeter because teams were not respecting the speed that they had outside and loading up on Josh Jacobs and loading up on Darren Waller at tight end and making life difficult for them. They could solve a lot of problems by getting somebody that could create separation, put fear in the hearts of the opposing defense, and then also create more room for the Darren Wallers to work in and the Josh Jacobs to work in. That's a long-winded way of saying they have to get better at wide receiver. They have to get better on defense, multiple positions on defense. But I think they're going to let things play out and be smart about it and come out of this offseason filling as many holes as they possibly can.
Well, something I find interesting is, so there's some talk that, you know, maybe they take that 12 and that 19 and they trade up. I mean, do you think that that's a possibility that they would do that? Or do you think they hold on them to get as many picks as they can?
Well, if they fall in love with one of the quarterbacks and feel that that's what they need to do to go do that, then they'll do that. But I don't think that they'll trade up. I don't think they'll sacrifice, you know, one of those first round picks in order to move up for a non-quarterback. I think that it's going to be a quarterback, and we're going to have to wait and see if they fell in love with any of the prospects that are going to be in this draft and whether they feel like reading the draft board that, you know, to get our guy that we're falling in love with, we got to go be aggressive and trade, you know, a first round pick to go get him, and maybe even more than that. So, and probably more than that. So I don't know. I think they're going to stay at those spots, and I think they're going to give Derek Carr one more shot with what they hope is going to be a full complement offensively, and by filling as many holes as they can defensively through the draft and free agency. And then maybe finally see with a full complement of players offensively what they really have in Derek Carr. And then this time next year, have a pretty good idea of whether Derek Carr really is the answer, or if they have to go ahead now and try to get another quarterback in here.
And now, Miles, just to kind of wrap up this conversation, you and Cassie, the lovely Cassie Soto, did a little video this week about those draft picks and what the teams that have had those numbers have done in previous years and what the Raiders are likely to do when they're on the clock. So what was one of your favorite takes from that video? I mean, when you look at the 12 and the 19, as we've been discussing here, but, you know, what from your end was a highlight there that you would like to share here with the Raider Nation?
Well, sure. I think one of the most interesting things, just going back and looking at the last few drafts for, you know, the 12th pick and the 19th pick, there's a team in recent history that actually had the 12th pick and the 19th pick, and it was in 2015, and it was the Cleveland Browns. And as one might expect, yes, oh boy is right, Vinny, because the Browns lulued all over themselves in those two picks. I mean, think about all the good players that came out of the 2015 draft. Well, you had Danny Shelton out of Washington, a defensive tackle. He's spent a little time with the Patriots now as in a reserve lineman role, but he was the number 12 overall pick. And then you look down the board a little bit at number 19, and it turns out, boom, it's Cam Irving, a center out of Florida State, who, you know, coincidentally enough, is now a reserve lineman on the Chiefs. So both of those guys actually went to better places after they flamed out with the Cleveland Browns. But that, look, I think we have reason to believe that the Raiders are not going to pick two players who are going to be first round busts like the Browns did at that point. I mean, and we have evidence for this, right? I mean, think about Cleveland Furrell at number 4 overall. You have Josh Jacobs and Jonathan Abram later on in the first round. So there's actually a track record of getting decent players in the first round, right? And then also, of course, I think you can look at the entirety of that 2019 draft for the Raiders and say, okay, you know, you feel at least pretty good about, you know, the Raiders having 5 picks in the top 90 this season. But I think also, you know, you can look at other guys who were picked at 12 and 19 in recent history. 2014, Odell Beckham Jr. goes number 12 overall to the New York Giants. You got somebody like Deshaun Watson going at number 12 overall to Houston in 2017. And even in 2018, Leighton Vander Esch, a linebacker out of Boise State, goes to the Dallas Cowboys at number 19 overall. So there is a history of good players being picked at those spots. The Raiders just have to find them and then draft them.
Yeah, and I would like to look at, you know, when you talk about that Browns draft, who was drafted 13, 14, 15, 16, 17, 18, 19, you know, and then, or 18, and then 20, 21, 22, 23, to see who they missed on, because I don't have any trust whatsoever in who they had, who they had running those drafts. So, I'm looking at Melvin Gordon. I'm looking at Eric Armstead, who's a star, Marcus Peters, Nelson Aguilar, Bud Dupree, Shane Ray. So there were players that they just missed on, you know? What that tells me is, if you're doing your homework, if you're good at what you do, the Raiders should come out of this draft with pretty darn good players at 12 and 19, just based on that draft alone, who the Browns just completely whiffed on and who they could have had, and who you know, the kind of draft that they could have had they just drafted more prudently.
right. So as we look ahead, the Super Bowl again featuring the Kansas City Chiefs and the San Francisco 49ers. And because this is a sports podcast and we do a lot here when it comes to the greatness of what it is that we cover, a lot of the focus here has been, of course, about the passing of Kobe Bryant. And it's something that I did want to ask you about both personally, because both of you came from Los Angeles. Both of you have had experience is covering various teams out there. And I know, Vinny, you had mentioned in our ride just the other day that, you know, you had an extensive past dealing with Kobe Bryant. So, I mean, I know it's a very emotional subject. I know the city of LA hurts right now. I know it's left a big hole for so many people, especially with the passing of his daughter as well. Vinny, if you could just share something with us here about Kobe Bryant that, I don't know, might in some way just kind of help console others out there. I mean, I think the more we talk about it, like we've seen Shaq last night just break down, you know, Jerry West has broken down. A lot of the players that have been around him have just, they're struggling right now. And I think a lot of the way to get past these things often is to talk about it. And, you know, I just kind of wanted to take a moment, pay homage as we look ahead to this big event coming up and how all these players have kind of bonded over this moment in football, just with his passing and their memories of him. So if you wouldn't mind sharing, Vinny.
Yeah. And I'm not ashamed to say whatsoever. I was a basket case on Sunday. I was balling left and right. I couldn't stop thinking about it, and I would gather myself and then start thinking about it again. I mean, to kind of put it in perspective, I've known Kobe since he was 17 years old. I was there at his first summer league game in Long Beach at the Long Beach Pyramid, dropping 29 points at 17 years old against a whole bunch of guys that are way older than he was. And you just realized, yeah, Jerry West was right. This guy's going to be pretty special. But then the daughters, every single game, the Laker game that I was at, and I was pretty much at all of them through those years, you know, after the kids were born, his wife Vanessa and the kids, especially the two older daughters, including Gianna, would always be right outside the locker room, sitting in the same place all the time, right just down the hall, running around, being little kids, you know, and hey, how you doing? And always, they always had big smiles. They were always beautiful little girls and polite, and just seeing them at that age, and then seeing them grow up and Gigi become a really good basketball player. And I tell anyone, go watch the tape of her. She was on her way to being a really, really good prospect. And just so for all of that, and to know Kobe and to know both sides of him, the in-season Kobe, who was just driven and relentless and probably rubbed some people the wrong way because he was pushing and prodding you, whether you were on the coaching staff, in the front office, fellow players. Nobody likes to be pushed beyond what they think they could be pushed. He did that, and it rubbed some people the wrong way. But hey, you can't argue with the results. Five championships speaks for itself. He got the Lakers and himself to the highest, to the pinnacle, over and over and over again. And that's all you're really that's what you're supposed to do as a player. And it didn't always sit well with some of his teammates. I get that, especially in the early years. I always felt like Kobe wrote a script for himself early on to be the best basketball player that ever lived. And that's a noble endeavor. I think early on he forgot to write a supporting cast into it, so the role of other players he didn't quite realize. I think later on in his career he realized, I need other guys, I really do. I need to write some other characters into this script, which he did. And if you talk to the second team, the Pau Gasols, the Lamar Odoms, you know, the Ron Artests, guys that played with him, loved him and swear by him. And you see those guys now just, you know, just emotional wrecks, you know, talking about him and remembering him. So, but that's the one side of Kobe. The other side of Kobe was the Kobe that I'd run into at a Dodger game or an Angel game or just around town sometimes and just be totally chill Kobe, off-season Kobe. So I always realize there's two different Kobes, and there's one guy who has to push himself where he feels he needs to get to where he got. And having been around professional sports, you realize that everybody gets to that spot in certain different ways. Some guys are really mellow, quiet. Some guys are very demanding. That's how he was, and it worked for him. And I never begrudged him that. I never misunderstood it for dislike or, you know, he's just an a-hole or whatever the case might be. He was just what he needed to be to get to that level. So, but just to see the full arc in Los Angeles, why there's such a hole in Los Angeles' heart right now, watching somebody grow from a teenager to all the ups and downs that he had and some of the controversies that he had and some of the ways he didn't connect with his teammates, and then seeing him at all the various stages of his life to post, you know, career Kobe, family man, middle-aged man who was ready to set the world on fire in a different way. He was like our little brother. He was really like our little brother, and we saw that growth and you know, that evolution of Kobe. And then for it to get cut down at this point just doesn't seem fair. And then you throw in, obviously, his daughter and then the seven other, you know, victims. It's just heartbreaking. And, you know, I'm just kind of now coming out of the fog a little bit. And I think a lot of other people are. But this one's going to hurt for a little while.
Yeah. Miles, as you know, Vinny just kind of mentioned, there are things that he had, memories of Kobe. You know, he's obviously a player that kind of transcended just being a basketball player. He meant so much to so many people. I didn't know if you had any take there on just, you know, remembering him or thinking about anything that, you know, if you had ever covered him. I wasn't sure of your experiences, but I knew that you've been in LA for quite some time.
Yeah, you know, I think one thing that really encompasses just how LA revered Kobe. And Vinny, you pointed this out the other day. When the Rams had just moved to Los Angeles in 2016, you know, I remember, like, literally it had been a couple of weeks that we had been there, and the team was based out of the Oxnard Residence Inn, where the Dallas Cowboys actually hold their training camp. The Rams were holding their offseason program there and working for the team at the time. That's where we were staying. So I remember being in an Oxnard Yard House watching Kobe drop 60 in his final game. And I remember very vividly my boss at the time then saying, like, hey, we need you to be, you know, ready at work very early in the morning the next day. And I was looking at my colleagues and being like, what is this about?
I got that text.
Yes. So, yes, Vinny knows what I'm talking about. And what had ended up happening was the Rams had traded up to number one overall to select Jared Goff, but they weren't announcing that at that time because of the reverence that Los Angeles had for Kobe Bryant. And it was Kobe's last game, and Kobe deserved to have that night. So I think, you know, even as I never got to cover Kobe Bryant, and, you know, I'm from Cleveland, you know, I was always a LeBron guy, but I think everybody knows who Kobe Bryant is, you know, whether it is some of the off the court issues that he had or just knowing what he did for the city of Los Angeles in terms of winning those championships, first with Shaq and then without Shaq. And the Mamba mentality, it really means something there. And I think, you know, when you talk about just the fact that, like, what really sort of crushed me on Sunday seeing different things on social media was seeing there was a video that somebody had posted, and it was basically highlights of Gigi playing basketball intercut with highlights of Kobe playing. And you see how her mannerisms emulated those of her father, and just the fact that, you know, the world's never going to be able to see that on a larger stage, and she's never going to be able to realize those dreams of playing professional basketball. You know, it's so gut-wrenching. And, you know, I honestly used to drive by the place where the helicopter crashed basically every day of my life when I was working for the Rams, because that stretch of road in Calabasas, it was on the way to work for me. So, you know, I tweeted this on Sunday. It's an incomprehensible tragedy. And, you know, for me personally, I guess it was made even more incomprehensible just by the fact that I know exactly where that happened. And it's a shame. It's just a real shame. And you just feel for everybody who loved anyone that was on that helicopter, be it, you know, Kobe, Gigi, or the other seven victims. It's hard.
I think one of the things that you realize too, seeing all the reaction, especially from some of the younger players and some guys that were in an age group below him, was the way Kobe was playing it forward with some of these younger kids and helping them and being an asset to them and being willing for them to lean on him for advice and for counseling and for mentorship. It was something that I don't think was ever really written about. He didn't do it for publicity, obviously. if that was more out there, maybe the narrative about him being a teammate that people didn't want to play for, which is always BS to begin with, but people would realize, like, and I don't think there's many other players that really did this to the extent that he did this. He was such a willing resource for the next generation. And I think that kind of flew way under the radar. It was really on the down low. But we're now, when you hear the Dwayne Wades and you hear some of the younger players of today talking about all these various conversations that they had with him, all the workouts that they went to with him, all the ways that he taught them in a willing kind of a way. I don't think Michael Jordan ever really did that. And I'm not taking anything away from Michael Jordan, but I don't remember him doing that. I don't remember Larry Bird necessarily doing that or some of the other greats of this game. Kobe Bryant did it. And the irony is, he was always criticized for not being a great teammate, when in reality, he was more than helpful, not just to his own teammates, people that swear by him, like Derek Fisher and Gasol, and guys like that, but to other players in this league that he was going to be competing against. He was more than willing to say, hey, I'm a phone call away, I'm a text away, hit me up. And they did, a bunch of them did, and he was there for every one of them.
And here in the Super Bowl media week, we've seen how he's affected all of these players, from Mahomes to George Kittle to even in Miami, the different mayors that have come out to speak and the opening ceremonies that dedicated time to him during their speeches. I mean, he had an effect on everyone, and we'll see how that work ethic and how that mentality transcends in these younger generations, like you said. So as everybody puts their best foot forward in this sport, we're going to look forward to seeing how this Super Bowl between the Chiefs and the 49ers turns out on Sunday. And we're going to also come back here with another episode next week. It'll be a little bit earlier than usual, but we will be here for you. So make sure to keep it tuned right here to the Vegas Nation podcast. You can find us anywhere that you are listening right now. Just hit subscribe, download that Vegas Nation app, head out to VegasNation.com, and find us on social at Vegas Nation as well. Find Miles on Twitter at Miles A. Simmons. Vinny is at Vinny Bonsignor, and I'm at Heidi Fang. Thank you, everybody, so much for listening. We appreciate all of you, and we'll be back soon.